Good afternoon. My name is Anne Cavall, and on behalf of the Breast Cancer Education Association Board and volunteers, I welcome you to the BCA webinar education series. I encourage you to grab a pen and paper, as there will be plenty of good information shared in the next hour. We do have participants joining us in two ways, via webcast or by phone. For those connected via webcast, please follow along with the slideshow on your screen. Also, for those connected via the webcast, you should see a box to the left of the slides where you will be able to submit questions during the Q&A portion near the end of the session, or also feel free to submit questions as we go along as well. And we'll try to get them in as best we can. This year, the BCA has made exciting new changes to expand our mission and provide more frequent breast cancer educational resources that are easier to access. This year, the expanded educational programming promises to encourage, empower, and engage our community in a variety of ways, including webinars such as this one offered throughout the year, a revitalized education-focused fall conference, which I'll talk about in just a minute, and increased ongoing resources on our website and social media channels available 24/7. If you have not done so already, please be sure to connect with us on social media. We regularly share and foster discussion on the latest news and resources in breast cancer detection, diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. We also encourage you to share what you learned today using the hashtag BCEAWebinar. Looking ahead, we ask that you please join us for our annual education conference on Saturday, October 8th at the Parkview Event Center at the Mall of America. This year's conference will highlight nutrition and dietary factors that prevent and control cancer development. Featuring nationally and internationally recognized integrative medicine specialist Dr. Gregory Plotnikoff, attendees will learn how to support and maintain a healthy immune system to prevent and manage disease. Renowned local chef Brenda Langton, owner of Spoon River, will then apply these disease-fighting strategies and other practical advice on easy food preparation and creative, delicious, healthy recipes. Oncology expert Dr. Tafaya Haddad will also provide the latest information in treatment for breast cancer patients. And as always, this year's conference includes the opportunity to connect with valuable community resources and time to meet with others just like you on how to best navigate the daily challenges of living with breast cancer. Registration for our conference is open right now on our website, and the early bird savings are available through September 23rd, which is just a month from today. So if you could visit breastcancereducation.org, we'd love for you to visit there, find out more information about the conference, and register. Please also be sure to keep your eye out for more information on our next webinar, which will be in early November. It's entitled Breast Cancer and Fertility, and will feature Dr. Eric Hegard of OBGYN West. And now I'd like to introduce our speaker for today's webinar, Brenda Hartman. Brenda Hartman is a licensed independent clinical social worker and a developmental psychotherapist with a specialization in oncology. She is the author of two books, Tell 'em Charlie Sent Ya, 9 Stories of Healing and Death, and a children's grief book, The Golden Thread, a true story of death, grief, and healing. Hartman has developed and presented programs to over 3,000 cancer patients and their families. From her own experience with stage 4 ovarian cancer, Ms. Hartman has focused her career on helping individuals and families face all aspects of the cancer experience. Her website is healingthroughlife.com. Welcome, Brenda.
Thank you so much, Anne. Nice to be here with everyone. I am dedicated and excited to be talking to everyone about hope in the cancer experience. I'll be talking from my own personal experience and all of those many, many cancer patients that I've had the opportunity to sit with both in my practice and in all of those conferences that I have presented at. Where I would like to start today is talking about my first strategy that I would encourage everyone to think about, engage in, or support them that they've already been doing it. I believe that cancer is a personal journey. And the way it starts out for many of us is that we're surprised when we're diagnosed with cancer. Nobody ever thinks that they are going to be diagnosed. And what is so wonderful, at the time that we're diagnosed, we go to an oncology professional. I refer to that as working with the AMA, the American Medical Association, and they have a path for us. They help us when we're scared, they have a diagnosis, and they have a treatment plan. And that's a wonderful thing, because in the very beginning, when we're so surprised, maybe even be in shock, we don't know what to do, who to turn to. Once we start this path, what's helpful is we know we need to add our own part. How do we integrate with this? How do we find hope? How do we work with this? At the same time, for many of us, if not all of us, we hear other people's stories about what their experience is and what they did or didn't do, those kinds of things. And I want to encourage everyone to recognize and claim that one's path is different from the other. We all have our own separate path, and we need to find our own path of healing. We are the only person that hears all of the recommendations from all of the different professionals that we work with and all our loved ones that are talking to us. And so this is a personal path that we find and listen to and feel our way through, taking one step at a time. So my first strategy is for you to not think that there's a right path or a wrong path for you to take with your healing, with your cancer journey, to know that it is your path. And I'd encourage you to know that you don't need to explain or defend your path to somebody else, because even when two people have the exact same diagnosis and the same treatment plan, the history that we have, where we come from, and where we're going is in fact different and impacts us differently. So if any of you have looked at my website, I speak about walking next to people, because I know that my path is different from any person I've ever spoken to, and it cannot be the same. But I honor and respect everybody's path and encourage all of us to find our own path, claim it, and feel strong in that path, which is where we're going to find hope for our own healing. The next thing I would like to talk about is what I refer to as the roller coaster ride of cancer. It is just this incredible ride of all kinds of mixed emotions that we go through. When we first get diagnosed, what many people talk to me about, they feel like they've touched their death. They've looked at it, and then they come back to life. Many times we will talk about how over a period of time we can look back and realize when we were first diagnosed, we thought we were going to die, even though we know all of the statistics that people don't die the next day from cancer. It's an emotional experience. We have this sense of shock. We have fears. We also have a lot of hope. We know lots of stories of people that are living with and through cancer for many, many years. Sometimes there's a sense of guilt, feeling, what did I do wrong? How could this happen to me? At times, we might feel like we're holding our breath, waiting for the next thing to happen. There's also this internal knowing, this internal understanding. I can't go back. I want to go back. I want to go back to that day before I heard you are a cancer patient, however we heard that. But everything looks different. there's this sense of nobody understands what this is like. And what we know is cancer patients connecting, like through this great organization, that the people that we can connect with are those who have also had the cancer experience. How I liken this experience is for those of us that have had children, that have children, it's prior to having children, we all think one thing about how we're going to be a parent and what it's going to be like. And then once we have a child join our family, join our life, you can't go back. And there's this realization that what I thought it was going to be like is not anything like what it really actually is. And then when you meet a person who's pregnant or anticipating the joining of their first child, they too have this idyllic sense of what it's going to be like. And we can't tell them it's not going to be like that. It's a one-way street. And cancer is like that. It's a one-way direction. Once you've been diagnosed, you're always a cancer patient in different stages. It can be past tense. I was a cancer patient. I was an active cancer patient, and now I am post-treatment, however we think about it. But it's a part of us forever, just like having children, and we can't explain that to other people who haven't had the experience. So again, you're going to have so many different emotions. I'm going to encourage you to touch every single one of them. Let them guide you. Feel them. They're giving you information that's helpful to you. I'm not saying to react. I'm saying to listen. So I would define my second strategy is to give you this freedom that you do not have to try and explain your experience to those that love you dearly and you love them. When you feel like they can't understand what this is like, that's okay. If we find ourselves hoping to explain something and then they will understand, I want to let you know it's personal. Even sitting cancer patient to cancer patient, how I responded to chemo and how any of you who had chemo responded to chemo was similar and different at the same time. At this point, Anne, are there any questions that I should be...
We do. We have two related questions regarding how to respond when people ask questions or have comments. And the first question is people asking what caused your cancer. And then the second related question is when they offer articles and internet information suggesting what treatment to do or not to do, how should someone respond to that?
Oh, boy, these are great questions, and I hear them all the time. When people are asking, what do you think caused cancer, or what did you do, there's a couple things that I would like to first and foremost say about that is almost all of us experience this, and we find ourselves thinking, why are they asking me this? What are they thinking? And I refer to this as Blurt's disease because the answer to the question, what are they thinking, is they're not thinking. They're reacting to our situation and hearing about our story. And they're responding in a way that is about their emotional experience psychologically. And so I want you to know that it's not really about you, and I'd like to protect you from that. I think the hardest one that I ever heard was one of my best childhood friends asked me what I did wrong because God must have done this to me because I had done something wrong. And what she did in saying that to me, although it took me about 2 days to start breathing again because I was in shock, she helped me understand that psychologically what all of us know from the data is that cancer is random. We do not have any data that says this one thing will 100% ensure that a person will have cancer, or if you do this, you will not have cancer. And so if a person says, did you do this? Common question is, are you a smoker or were you a smoker? They're trying to find a way to protect themselves from, I can't have cancer because I didn't do that. It's not true. We know that's not true. The second question related to when people want to give us ideas on what they think they would do if they were in treatment and what they think we should be doing. If we should be in treatment, if we should not be in treatment, if we should, all kinds of different things. And again, I want to remind you that this is a personal path, and anybody that hasn't had cancer really doesn't know how they would respond until they're there. And then there are those people that what they found was healing for them. They want to share that with you and say, this was what worked for me. I'd like you to think about what they're doing is that they're giving you a gift when they're saying this. And it's wrapped in a package, it's beautifully wrapped. They spent a lot of money on the wrapping. And so, you know, with the wrapping, you need to take that apart and open the gift, because the wrapping is not the gift. So I would have you think about the wrapping of the gift is what they're telling you. And that the gift inside is that they love and care about you. And they do so much that they've thought, what would they do if they were in your situation? They're not. But not to mistake the wrapping, the suggestions, and here's what they read on the internet, and here's what they think you should do. That isn't the gift. The gift is they love you and they care about you, and hold that close to your heart. Thank you for those questions.
Thank you.
The next place I would like to go is what I refer to as pies of life. This strategy came for me trying to understand, before I started working with cancer patients, what happened to me, and trying to make sense of where I was in life and where cancer went. And so each pie is going to represent an overview of a given point in my life. So I'm going to break this down for us. That the first pie is the pie that represents, for all of us, our life before diagnosis. So I'd like you to think about what your life was like, what it was, what this pie would have been filled with, you know, your family, your work, your friends, exercise, nutrition, your faith, all of those things that would have filled this pie of life. For me, I was in graduate school, so that took a huge part of my pie, and it was a good life. We all had a good life. I'm not saying it was perfect, but it's a good life, and we were enjoying our lives. And our second pie is when we were in that life, we had future hopes and dreams before our cancer diagnosis, where we thought we were going, what we wanted to be doing. So for many people, it's like, I'm planning this vacation, we're going to travel, I'm going to have children, or a graduation, or retire, moving, those kinds of things. It's like, where are we, where's our life goals? For me, it was completing my graduate school and becoming a professor. My hope was to become a professor and to do research. What pie number three represents, and if you remember the series of the five slides, this one went way down, and this is the crisis of diagnosis and treatment. This is where life went. It's not the hopes and dreams, because nobody hopes and dreams about having cancer. This is where you found yourself. This is when we learn what oncology and radiology really mean. This is, for those, when we think about this, it can be a crisis, and when the MA really comes into our life. And so my life pie, number three, the MA slice of my pie took over half of my pie. It took, you know, it seems like in our schedule, they have endless appointments for us, that our life is just going from one appointment to the next, and we are incorporating the rest of our life around those appointments. The comfort in the AMA being in this pie with our diagnosis is that they have a plan. They know what to do. Additionally, we also have questions. We're wondering what to do. Where are we going? For some people in this webinar, this pie number three may just be their diagnosis. For others, it may be also the treatment, because the next pie, number four, represents where are you right now? Where is life today? For some people, it will be that you're in treatment, you're continuing treatment. For others, they'll have completed their treatment and are considered NED, no evidence of disease. And they're now dealing with how do I maintain this cancer-free status. For others, it may be that they're in a place of lifelong treatment. That sense of treatment for me is like insulin. It's a time where I'm trying to come to terms with how do I do this and incorporate this into my life. So pie number four, where we all are right now, it's for many of us, and it's a time of reflection. It's like, how did I get here? What happened? Back at pie number one, I thought I knew where I was going, which was pie number two. And then I found myself at pie number three, and here I am right now. And where am I going? Is it possible to have any hope for the future? Which is about pie number five, is how do we start creating new hopes and dreams after cancer, ongoing treatment? This is what we're reaching for. This is my focus working with every single cancer patient, is how do we be present where we are and figure out and find the pathway to have a future again, where we can have hopes and dreams again, that life can be good. Part of pie number five is to recognize that oncology, being a cancer patient, is a part of our life forever. Future scans, future tests, watching for cancer, there's fears, there's hopes. So the question is, how do we get here? And what I've learned over time through this process is that we need to grieve pie number one, which was the life that we had prior to cancer, and pie number two, those hopes and dreams that we thought we were going to reach and strive for. And we need to allow those experiences to be a part of who we were, say goodbye to them so that we can create new future dreams. Many people say to me that they've heard, if they're at pie number four and they're NED, that their family, their friends say, just go back to pie number one. Just pick up and go where you've left off. And there is this internal knowing, I can't go back to a time before I had cancer. I have to incorporate this. This is part of who I am and where I am going, which is why pie number five can exist, is when I incorporate this and I let go and grieve good life. It was a wonderful life, and it was wonderful hopes and dreams. I can now create new hopes and dreams in pie number five. The only difference may be is that pie number five has a small slice for the AMA. When I go in and I get tests, when I take treatment, if I'm on ongoing treatment, that I have this as part of who I am. So strategy number three is about grieving and honoring where you have been, recognizing that, and bringing yourself into the present, so that you can start looking to the future and claim all of your life. So, Anne, I'm wondering, at this time, I just said many things, if there's any questions.
We actually have a few, and I think I'm going to save one of them for the Q&A at the end. But one person is asking, can you just clarify when you're making a reference to the AMA, can you just clarify that reference? Because I think there's some confusion there.
That's a great question. Thank you for asking it. I'm referring to the American Medical Association. I'm referring to your oncologist, I'm the radiologist, your surgeon, your medical team. And so that's why not everybody has a surgeon, not everybody has a radiologist. You know, we all have an oncologist. Not everybody gets chemotherapy. So I think about it as that whole medical team. And what other people can put in there is they might have a massage therapist, an acupuncturist, a nutritionist, all of those people that are giving us ideas and are supporting our healing path.
Thank you. And then looking at all of the pies of life, the question was posed, which I think is a great one, kind of sums it up, is this the new normal that people talk about?
That's excellent. They're right. That's an excellent question, because we all have this desire to go back to pie number one and be who we were prior to our cancer diagnosis. Yet we can't, because how can I can't forget what I've just been through. And again, I'll remind you of my comparison to becoming a parent. Once we become a parent, we can't go back to being an adult without children. Life is different now. I wouldn't define it as better or worse, but it's different, because cancer is a life-changing experience. And our path is about incorporating it into our life and having it be a part of my life, not my whole definition of who I am. When I was first diagnosed, I thought of myself as a cancer patient who used to go to school. And then I began to be a person who went to school, have a life, and I'm also, part of me is a cancer patient. Many people tell me at this point, when they're thinking about new normal and who have I become, is that they now have a clear self, clear sense of themselves, what is and isn't important for them. Many times I think of cancer as like a flower sifter of life, and that it sifts through what's important and what's not important. And what is the most important thing is on the top of the sifter. And those are our family and friends, and maybe some of you that are here on the webinar would name several other things that are critically important that has become highlighted through this experience of cancer. I also want to talk now about positive and negative thinking. This is my fourth strategy. I hear about this all the time from people, that when we're talking positively about our experience and our hopes, our support network really likes that. They compliment us. They tell us that we're their role model. They say, you're amazing. I don't know how you do it. You're always so upbeat. You're an inspiration to me. And I can tell you that I've had many people sit in my practice privately saying those things, and they're sobbing. They're saying, I'm not trying to be anybody's role model. I'm not trying to inspire anyone. I'm trying to get through this very difficult experience. And at the same time, they want to talk about their fears and their concerns and their worry for their loved ones, what they're doing to, if you will, to their family. And they feel, when they try to talk about their fears, their concerns, their worries, their loved ones say, just think positive. And many times people recite We know from the research that positive thinking, the power of positive thinking, that's a very old thing, Norman Vincent Peale. What's difficult about it is that we have all of these feelings. We have a lot of fears. And many times people, when they're told just think positive, then they tell me they feel guilty that they have negative thoughts and they shouldn't have them. And then they may say to me that they're feeling like, am I causing my own cancer by being a worrier? Am I not making my treatment effective? All of those kinds of things. And then they feel ashamed that they're thinking this. And I want to say out loud, as a cancer patient myself and sitting with so many people, it's impossible not to have those negative thoughts or those fears, those worries. So in working with this, I came up with that we have this hope and doubt continuum, that on one end, we have hope that good things, wonderful healing experiences can come from the cancer experience for ourselves and for those around us. On the other end of the continuum are our doubts and fears, and that we have many concerns that there won't be anything good that comes from this, and that we're scared what can happen and what's the impact on our loved ones. And when we get caught in that positive and negative thinking, that either or, it gets to be a complete bind back and forth, and we can get stuck. So for me, I think about this as a continuum, that we have hopes and we have doubts, and we can slide back and forth. That sometimes I may have some doubts, but I'm not completely in my darkest place. Or there's days when I can be hopeful, but I'm not exceedingly hopeful. I still have a little bit of doubt. And so many times when I have family members, spouses, support people meeting with me, or when I'm meeting with the whole family, I'll draw a continuum like this on the table and ask everyone to place a physical object showing where on this continuum are they right now emotionally feeling. And so if somebody is having doubts, and there are those that are filled with hope, I know we can beat this and we can do those kinds of things, I ask the people who are holding the hope to grab that thread of hope and hold the person, emotionally speaking, who has their doubts, and allow them to speak and name their doubts and their fears, because these are fears about the future. And if we can't say them, they get very big and very loud, because they are real doubts and fears. But as a person can say them out loud, sitting next to somebody that's hopeful, and the hopeful person's just right next to them, those doubts and fears of the future can drop off and just not be so ever present, and we can come back to that even place in the middle, which is this moment that we call now. That right here, right now, I am alive, healing, and I'm present with you. And I don't know where we're going in the future, but I can see that there are both hopes, dreams, doubts, and fears, and we are here right now, and I can be centered in the here right now, because I can allow myself to touch all of those feelings. I have a little mantra for myself that when I am fearful of my cancer coming back, I say, I am alive, I'm well, I'm healing until further notice. And as cancer patients, you understand why I say until further notice. But that allows me to come back to what is happening right here, right now, And I can acknowledge that I have hope for where my life is going. And I also have doubts, and I can balance both of those and be present. Some of the current terminology for that would be mindful. It's being in the present moment. And if you study mindfulness, or if you meditate, guided relaxation, the goal is to be able to be still enough to allow those feelings and thoughts to come and pass by without having to react to them, knowing that they're thoughts, they're feelings, and there is this moment. My next slide, strategy 5, is about fear. How do we manage fear? How do we anticipate medical appointments, scans, tests that we all do? Going back to the great question about what AMA represents, this is our AMA place. When they ask us to come back in and get a scan, take blood tests, another medical appointment, the anticipation is a time for all of us that the AMA slice in our current pie of life gets bigger because it's absorbing more of our thoughts, more of our feelings, our family, friends, our support network. They're also checking in. People are saying, do you want me to come with you? Can I come with you? What's this exam like? What's this test result about? Those kinds of things.
Brenda,
so strategy.
May I please stop you for a minute? We have a good question that from someone who said not all have the comfort of AMA because they've been victimized by the original medical team. She mentioned that, you know, she can select a new team, but that comfort is no longer there. And how can she incorporate that into the new normal that you were talking about before?
Oh, I think that's a great question, and I'm so sorry that she feels victimized by her initial treatment team. And I'm just so sorry. And I've heard that many times from people. And, you know, my very first slide and comment was about finding your own path. And this is exactly what I'm taught. She's right. She needs to find and claim her path. And who can be part of her treatment team that she trusts, or at least somebody that she can go to that she feels is giving her respectful, honest information. And I would really encourage her to have another person always go with her to appointment, because to be in the moment of the appointment, which is always just a highly stressful time, to hear everything and be able to ask all the questions that you want to ask. I don't think any one of us can do that. It's always helpful to have a second set of ears and to have another person that's willing to help ask questions. That's a big piece. It's just, and maybe instead of her thinking about her, the AMA is just a support team, it's something she needs to do. Because if she's going and getting treatment, if she's going and getting scans or test results, these are people that she is going to see, and that might be part of the fear that she's experiencing, is how are they going to treat her. And I would really encourage her to always make sure somebody's with her to advocate for her.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's a tough situation. So when I'm talking about fears, it could be like this woman's fears or any of our fears about what is going to happen. So in this diagram, I use the yellow arrow to just represent that I'm talking about time, moving through linear time. And so the first blue arrow represents time, and then the blue circles represent those medical events, those appointments, scan, any of those things that you are actively participating in. And so what happens, how fear works for us, is we go through that blue arrow, right? And we get into that, as we're anticipating this, we get into that appointment, that scan, and our fear stops us. As many people have told me, Brenda, I get stopped dead in my tracks. And I'll say, notice what you're saying. This is not true. You're going to get through this test. You're going to get through this scan. And fear only tells us the worst possible outcome. It never tells us this is going to be good. This scan is going to support that I am continuing to improve, get stronger. The cancer still is away. I am continuing to be Ned. No evidence of disease. I have many people that I work with because they are experiencing panic attacks prior to going in for one of these medical appointments. My way of thinking about this is that when I am anticipating going in for a medical appointment, so think about being at that very first arrow, and I'm anticipating that circle, that whatever that event is. For me, it's always scan. I think about being in that scan, and that scan, that little circle, is a healing bubble, and I come out of it. It's really important to think yourself through that event and come out through. And then I know there's going to be another medical event. There's going to be another scan that's going to lead me throughout to the time with no scan, to the third bubble, leading me through that. When I first started getting scans after my treatment, I was terrified because I didn't know what they were going to say. Was I going to have to go back into treatment? I didn't know. And then I came to this realization, this new normal realization, that I'm going to have scans for the rest of my life. And then I came to the realization that they don't scan dead people. So it was a really good idea to keep being scanned. That as long as they were scanning me, this is good. Because I have a reason to be scanned, because my mantra, I'm alive, I'm well, I'm healing. And I understand that that scan is part of my further notice, what might be dealt with next. Yet that means that something can be dealt with. And that scan, medical appointment, working with all your complementary people, if you have a part of that, that this is part of living now. This is incorporating life as a cancer patient, the new normal. And I want to say very clearly, accepting this is different than saying I'm excited about this or that I wanted it. Acceptance is recognizing where I am. So strategy 5 is about when you're anticipating your next medical test, scan, appointment, to think about that appointment through that appointment to living after the appointment, knowing there's going to be another one, but between those circles is life, and that those scans and appointments are part of your healing and living path. It's not a stopping point to your life. My sixth strategy that I'd like to talk about is something that I've come to understand and name as a twisted gift. This is about finding opportunities that can only come from this very difficult experience. So I think about cancer comes into our life and it's incredibly painful. It's something that we've never anticipated or wanted. And through our healing, we can turn it over and find opportunities that would not have come to us without this cancer experience. Again, I want to say, I am not meaning that you have to be happy about cancer. Not at all. It's a recognition that there's certain things that come from this very difficult experience that would not have happened if we hadn't had cancer. In my family, an example of this, I come from a very good Minnesota family, which is everybody's fine. And, you know, we don't really hug with full embrace. I can tell you that what has changed in all of my family members since my cancer is that everyone always says, I love you. Everyone always hugs when we're together. What happens for many people, some of the twisted gifts, is that the number of friends and family members that come forward and help is astonishing to them. They feel it's a gift. Another big one is that people start asking you, what do you need? What can I do to help you? For many of us cancer patients, we have to learn how to say what we need. Many of us have been the person who took care of everyone else, and this is a new skill. One of the opportunities, one of the twisted gifts, is to learn, how do I say what it is that I need, and to be able to take the time to think about what is it that I need and how do I say that and allow others to care for me. Part of this is about redefining what is important in your life. That is a twisted gift. I know for me that one of the things that I've changed in what is important to me is aging is very important to me. I'm very excited to be getting older. I'm excited to be getting gray hair. And there's no way I'm going to color it. That's just my way of thinking about this. I'm not telling anyone not to change their hair color. So my sixth strategy is to look for and to claim the gifts of cancer. And when painful parts come up, because they continue to come up, know that you can acknowledge that pain, that hurt, that loss, and then turn it over, knowing that there's also a gift side to claim that. So again, to know both of those are true, not just one or the other. They both are true, and they are sandwiched together. At this time, Anne, I would love to turn it over and see if there's any questions that I can answer.
We have several. So the first one that was submitted earlier in the webinar was, how do you keep all chronic condition doctors and cancer doctors updated through the cancer treatment and then as a survivor with follow-up care?
That's a great question. And part of what's so difficult about this and why I advocate for being the center of your own healing path is that it's hard to coordinate care. And if everyone was talking to everyone, that wouldn't become our job, but it truly is our job. I think one of the chronic conditions, and many, many cancer patients now are considered chronic. So, and then there becomes a huge medical team. You know, I know that as a medical provider, everyone has email, and they should be having email that is confidential. And unfortunately, you're going to be the one to send those pieces of information from one to the next. I also strongly encourage you to write one little update and send it to everyone. And when you go to your next appointment with the next provider is for you to come in with current information. I know for myself, whenever I meet a new provider, I always know if somebody has read my chart. Because if they have read anything about me, they will comment on my stage 4 diagnosis. So I think it's our part and our responsibility, although it's onerous, that we need to let people know. So I'd encourage you to write up a small summary statement and send it to all of them, the same exact statement.
Thank you. So another question that we received was that you had mentioned to take care of yourself and ask for what you need. This woman says, I'm a mom and I work. I don't know what I need or want. What can I do?
That's a great question. I hear that one often. I first and foremost want to remind you as a mom, a working mother, that I'm asking you to learn a new skill. And so if you remember that it's a new skill, that means that we need to focus on it and we need to be incredibly gentle as we're trying this new skill out, and that the others around you are also learning a new skill, which is to listen to your needs too. It's going to take some focused attention. There's two ways that this skill is referred to. One is being self-assertive, and the other is being self-empowered. So a great way to practice is to start with things that you're already doing for yourself, yet I'm guessing that you're not giving yourself credit, like choosing what you want to wear or choosing what you want to eat. It's these little things for you to start saying to yourself, I choose to wear this blouse. I choose to sit in this chair. I choose to have this cereal for breakfast or whatever you're choosing to eat. This is a cognitive change that we're trying to create for you to begin recognizing choices you're making for yourself so that you can become comfortable then in the next situation to ask for it. It is increasing your awareness that you have ideas, thoughts, needs, and wants. And it's okay to say them. That doesn't mean everybody's going to let you do them yet. To be able to start noticing. Please remember, be gentle with yourself throughout this process of change.
We have a few more minutes, and so I just want to pose at least one other question and one other comment that we received that you might want to respond to. The one question is that I know that cancer has changed my perspective on life, but I'm not sure how or what to say to people. I just know I feel different. What would you recommend I do to understand my own changes?
Oh, again, excellent question. Something that I talk with people a lot about. Cancer has a really profound impact on many of us, although not everyone. So that can be confusing too. But I want to affirm that it's a real gradual process of understanding how it has changed you. First, please, again, be gentle with yourself. And I want to remind you, you do not have to explain this to anyone. It's a very personal experience. So as I said earlier, one of the ways that it changed me is my reaction to people when they have, like, their 50th birthday, the over-the-hill birthday, I have a very strong reaction to that. And I remember saying to a good friend who turned 60, and she was really lamenting it, and I just started crying. And she's lying. I wasn't really sure. And I was like, but, you know, I can't wait to be 60. I hope I have a chance to be 60. So all the advertising products right now on the market about getting rid of wrinkles, you know, I know that people burn those wrinkles through living long enough. I don't need to say that to anyone, but I know that's part of how it's changed for me. So These are just different things that you'll notice and you'll feel it that I used to think. Like one person said to me, she used to want to have a bigger house and now she wants actually to downsize. It's like, this isn't important. I used to only want to wear certain designer clothes and now I'm not looking at that. It's about spending time with my grandchildren, this woman said. This is truly a very personal path. Please be gentle with your own process of change because it's very different for each and every one of us.
So one of the comments was about, it's interesting how the term cancer patient is used and that it's a, you are a person, excuse me, you are a person with cancer and you're a person first. And this participant just said when she hears cancer patient, she cringes. So what are your thoughts on that?
That's an interesting comment. You know, the phrase now, NED, no evidence of disease, that when I finished treatment, they didn't have that phrase. And, you know, I don't like the word patient because it can also be, please be patient, and I'm anything but patient because I want to be alive now. I think of myself as an inactive cancer patient. I say that to be kind of abrasive to get people to stop and think about what they're saying. I really want to be Brenda first that had an experience with cancer. So I very much play with words in to help people understand what I'm thinking. And I would love it if they would ask a question so that I can have a conversation. So maybe the person who said that, she reacts to that, how she can say it to people. It's just an aspect of my life. Cancer is like, I'm an athlete sometimes, but I'm not running every day. So some kind of way of talking about it, because even moms, as a mother, I'm not always a mom. I also work and I also volunteer and do different things. And there isn't one definition. So that's a great way to begin a conversation, should she want a conversation, to help expand people's awareness.
Perfect. So we are getting to the top of the hour. I just wanted, we got one more question about your website, and that website is healingthroughlife.com. And I just want to give gracious thanks to our speaker, Brenda Hartman, and to you for all joining us today. Again, please share what you learned today via our social media channels, and don't forget to join us at our annual conference on October 8th and for the next webinar in early November. Thank you so much.
Thank you for this opportunity.